In a sweltering Supreme Court chamber in June 2013, an 80-year-old Jewish grandmother from Brooklyn delivered a fiery dissent that transformed her into a pop culture phenomenon. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg condemned the court's hubris in dismantling the Voting Rights Act with a voice both steady and resolute. This wasn't just another legal opinion. It marked the culmination of a lifetime spent methodically fighting discrimination. Young progressives began creating tribute art, dubbing her Notorious RBG, a nod to Brooklyn rapper Notorious B.I.G. Soon, her image appeared on everything from tattoos to Halloween costumes, cocktails bore her name, and Kate McKinnon portrayed her delivering Ginsburns on Saturday Night Live. How did this soft-spoken intellectual become a cultural icon? The answer lies in her extraordinary journey from Brooklyn to the highest court, and in the revolutionary vision she carefully advanced while maintaining the appearance of a conventional, proper lady. Growing up Jewish in 1940s Flatbush, Kiki Bader excelled as a cellist and honor student. Brooklyn nurtured her love for reading, especially Nancy Drew mysteries featuring a girl who was an adventurer who could think for herself. Her mother, Celia, sacrificed her own education to fund her brother's Cornell degree. She instilled in Ruth two vital principles: be a lady and be independent. Revolutionary advice for daughters then. Tragedy struck early when Ruth's sister died during her toddler years. Later, Ruth studied by her cancer-stricken mother's bedside until Celia's death, just before her high school graduation. The exclusion of women from Jewish mourning rituals awakened Ruth's consciousness of gender inequality. After her death, Ruth discovered Celia had secretly saved $8,000 for her education across five banks. At Harvard Law in 1956, Ruth was among nine women in a class of 500. She excelled despite skepticism from Dean Griswold, making Harvard Law Review while supporting her husband Marty through cancer and caring for their infant daughter Jane. When Marty's recovery necessitated moving to New York, Ruth transferred to Columbia after Dean Griswold refused to grant her a Harvard degree for Columbia coursework. There, she again made Law Review and graduated first in her class. Despite her achievements, Ruth faced persistent discrimination, including Justice Frankfurter's rejection for a clerkship. She pivoted to co-authoring a book on Swedish civil procedure, where she witnessed women actively challenging traditional roles. Eva Moberg's essay on gender equality, arguing both sexes share one main role, that of being human beings, profoundly shaped her perspective. At Rutgers Law School, she faced salary discrimination and had to hide her pregnancy with James until securing her next contract. As women's presence in law schools increased alongside the Civil Rights Act and the Feminine Mystique's influence, student demand led Ruth to deeply study federal decisions on women's status. By 1971, Ruth recognized the need for systemic change. The Moritz case, involving a bachelor denied caregiving tax deductions available only to women and widowers, became her first opportunity to challenge structural gender discrimination. Ruth partnered with the ACLU to challenge Reed v. Reed, an Idaho law favoring men as estate administrators. Her brief argued that sex-based classifications should be considered suspect, like racial ones, noting that the pedestal upon which women have been placed has all too often been revealed as a cage. In Frontiero v. Richardson, 1973, Ruth represented Air Force Lieutenant Sharon Frontiero, whose husband was denied benefits automatically given to wives of male officers. Wearing her mother's jewelry, she faced the nine male justices confidently, arguing that differential treatment of women implied a judgment of inferiority. She concluded with Sarah Grimke's words, "I ask no favor for my sex. All I ask of our brethren is that they take their feet off our necks." Under Ruth's leadership, the ACLU Women's Rights Project pursued gradual change. Her motto, "Don't ask them to go too far too fast, or you'll lose what you might have won," proved effective in transforming the law. Ruth's marriage to Marty challenged conventions. "He thought that I must be pretty good. Why else would he decide to spend his life with me?" she'd say. On Manhattan's Upper East Side, they built what Steven Wiesenfeld called an alternative family lifestyle of true partnership. Marty's humor and support elevated Ruth's strengths. Though he joked about his own mediocre class standing, he proudly celebrated her Harvard Law Review achievement. Ruth championed cases like Wiesenfeld's, where a widower was denied mother's benefits after his wife's death in childbirth, embodying her belief that for women to be equal, men had to be free. Their practical partnership crystallized in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. After Ruth's tuna casserole mishap, Marty became the family chef, leading their daughter Jane to suggest mommy should be phased out of the kitchen altogether. The solution was elegant. Mommy does the thinking and daddy does the cooking. As a justice, Ruth joined the previously all-male conference room. Her landmark moment came in United States versus Virginia, challenging VMI's male-only admissions. Her majority opinion declared that gender distinctions cannot perpetuate women's inferiority, noting that differences between sexes should be celebrated without restricting opportunities. In 2005, Sandra Day O'Connor's retirement and Chief Justice Rehnquist's death led to appointments that shifted the court rightward. Once again, the lone woman justice, Ruth found herself in familiar territory. Women had become a one-at-a-time curiosity. When the court upheld a federal partial birth abortion ban in 2007, suggesting women needed protection from regret, Ruth delivered a powerful dissent. She emphasized that abortion cases concerned women's autonomy and equal citizenship, denouncing the court's unsubstantiated claims about regret. Ruth's distinctive lacy collars, jabots, began as a practical response to male-designed robes with specific pieces for different occasions, a glass-beaded velvet bib for dissents, a gold-trimmed charm for majority opinions, and pieces from her global travels. Resisting retirement pressure during Obama's presidency, Ruth insisted she'd serve until she could no longer instantly recall case names. Following her 2009 pancreatic cancer diagnosis, she returned to work within weeks, proving both her resilience and the importance of women's representation. In the 2015 same-sex marriage case, Ruth challenged traditional views by highlighting marriage's evolution from treating women as property to an egalitarian institution, a transformation that enabled her own marriage. Though hesitant to discuss legacy, Ruth takes pride in advancing equality. Gender discrimination is bad for everyone. The Constitution begins, "We the people," in order to form a more perfect union. We're still striving for that more perfect union, where "we the people" includes an ever-enlarged group. Notorious RBG shows that revolution can come through methodical legal work rather than radical action, with her legacy living on in both landmark decisions and her persistent advocacy for equality.